This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 257. Gonna have to start making some plans for the 5 years worth of podcasts anniversary. And hopefully I'm going to make it all the way through this podcast by the time I get home, because I just noticed my battery indicator was... it's only showing 2 bars, so I'm hoping that that's actually true, because it took a long time to get to that point. I'm hoping that it isn't one of these indicators that, you know, it's full, it's full, it's full, it's full, it's full, it's three-quarters, three-quarters, half, done. But, you know, we'll see. I'll keep watching my little indicator light, and if the indicator light goes out, then I'll be like, ah. So we may be done early, and I'll wrap up next week. We'll see. Anyways, 257. It's been a good week. Had several nice conversations with buddies this week, and we actually had an associate in to stay with us. She's working on her doctorate, so she left today. She was in... when I did the podcast last week, because she stayed with us for like 10 days. So that was all good. It was good seeing her again. We had many a conversation. She's a talker. I'm a talker. So we had plenty of conversations while she was here. So that was fun. She's headed back to South Carolina now. And, you know, who knows? My wife and I may go out to visit her. My wife's trying to remember Charleston, South Carolina, I think it is. And my wife's been wanting to go back there anyways, because she had been there, I think, with her parents and said it was just gorgeous there. So, you know, we just might do that. We'll see. We haven't really talked about any plans for this year in terms of traveling, but now that I kind of have a new formula, the formula being we only take one vacation a year, and then I use the 3/13th weeks of the quarters. That 13th week, I can squirrel that money away, because I can make budget on 4 weeks a month, and occasionally you get that 5th week that slides in there. So since it looks like I'm going to have plenty to do over, the next several years, if nothing changes, then maybe we'll start setting that aside and just have a nice vacation in September for our wedding anniversary. So anyways, so all is well. Things are puttering along. I didn't quite get finished with the one client I was supposed to be finished with by the end of February, but I'm not quite synced in with the new department yet anyways, and so if I have to split time a little bit over the first couple of days of the next week, I think that's going to be fine. It's not going to be any problems. So I think it's wrapping up, and so far so good. You know, it's looking like it's going to come together fine. Just a lot of little details to take care of. And I had actually planned to have 4 full days to do this. As it turns out, that's probably what it's going to take. But then we wanted to do some work on another little side thing with it, and I thought, I can probably get it done in 2 days, and so I actually robbed a couple of days back, and I'm gonna need them now, so that's it. But that's okay, you know, day or two here and there over a project that lasted on and off for a year, you know, that's not too far off. What else? That's about it. Just doing some writing, and it's really interesting to me. I don't know if it's interesting to anybody else, but I had a little screenplay-like thing I had done that had already kind of outlined where this book was going, but it's just always amazing. Sorry, it's been a long week. It just always amazes me that once you actually get into it, you know, then it's like, oh, I could add that. No, I could go over here. No, I could make it twisted that way. No, I could. And the thing starts taking on a life of its own. And things start showing up that you didn't even know were going to be there. So I will have to admit that in looking forward to the fact that this is book one and there's going to be 24 books in this series, it's a little bit of a daunting task. You know, on the other hand, I've been doing this podcast for close to 5 years now, and so if I had been writing those books all along, I'd be working on book 9 at this point. No, book 10 at this point. So, you know, you put one foot in front of the other and you say, this is where we're going, and then you just keep doing it. And if you just don't quit, things happen. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'm pretty pleased with so far with how it's the rough draft of the first book in Windfall is coming along. It's rough. And I will definitely have to go back and do some polishing, but excuse me, that's okay. That's okay. Things are good. It's fun. I'm enjoying it. On to the topic. I almost didn't do this topic because I had just done a podcast on sex last week. But this had some really interesting stuff in it. And I thought, yeah, you know, why not? We'll get to some other kind of science-y thing next week. I'm sure something will come along. And if it doesn't, then maybe I'll just do sex topics for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I'll have the 5 year and we'll say, ta-da! That has been something that has kind of, you know, stuck in the back of my brain. You know, it will be 5 years worth of podcast. Do you really have anything else you would like to say? And if not, that's kind of a good boundary just to go, well, this was fun, click. You know, on the other hand, this isn't that hard to do. I mean, basically, I'm going to read news anyways. And watch things here and there while I'm exercising. And since I'm going to read news anyways and watch things here and there as I'm exercising, basically all I have to do is on Wednesday night spend 40 or 45 minutes or so or an hour putting together some notes and then just talk on my way home. So, I don't know. I don't know if I'm just ready to find a stopping place just yet. Anyway, so I've stumbled across this documentary. I don't even know how I stumbled across it. Maybe it came up on the first page of YouTube or something as a trending thing. It was a documentary on lust. The mechanisms of lust. And I thought, oh, this should be very interesting because I'm always looking for things that help me be more successful in life. And I'm a guy, which means I have certain mental and physical responses that I would like to understand better. And you know, while the documentary does have, you know, in-betweener scenes, when they're talking about stuff where you have men and women dressed in bathing suits gazing longingly at each other, while it does have some of that in it, it also has quite a bit of scientific stuff in it, and I did find it very interesting. I talked to a number of different researchers, and I explored the research that they're doing to try to answer some of the questions about what are the mechanisms of lust, how much does it control our lives, how much does it affect our behavior. So one of the experiments that they did that was really interesting, and all the buddies that I've had, all the buddies, because I had a female buddy staying with us this week, and, you know, she and I talked about this too, but all the buddies that I've had conversations with about this, this first one just surprised all of them. And what it was, is there was this experiment, and a sex researcher found a guy who had sold sunglasses for decades. He was a street vendor, so he had a little cart and would normally carry a lot of different kinds of sunglasses. But for this experiment, they bought out his inventory and they stocked him, or wanted him, to sell only two kinds of sunglasses. One was the most popular kind, millions sold, and the other one was a unique kind. And the unique one, in fact, had, you know, live like a king or something on it, because they were retro gold Elvis-like sunglasses. They were pretty gaudy. So what the researcher had the sunglass vendor do was, during the first day, they positioned the cart in kind of a little, you know, behind like blank background with just normal everyday shops, and they just had him sell sunglasses all day. And during that first day, there was really only, they said, only one style of shades that were moving, which was the normal ones, the ones that were the most popular. Guys would come by, you know, they'd try on the normal ones and go, yeah, okay, I'll take these. And everybody would kind of give a sideway glance to the gaudy Elvis-type sunglasses. So then, on a subsequent day, they wheeled the cart a couple of streets over, and they positioned it in front of a sex, well, it's not a sex shop, but a lingerie shop, where they sold, you know, toys for adult entertainment and all manner of displays in front of the windows and flashing signs, blah, blah. So obviously, as the guys are trying on these sunglasses, that's going to be in the background. And at one point, they referred to it as subliminal messages coming from the sex shop. I wouldn't really qualify it as subliminal, because I can guarantee you that every guy who was buying sunglasses knew the store was there, because we're guys. What was interesting, though, is that after the store was there, or after the cart was there, that with the sex cues in the background, the guys started preferring the unique pair of sunglasses, the gaudy Elvis-type sunglasses. In fact, they said 60% of them chose the unique glasses. And the researcher explained it by saying that men know they're competing for women's attention, and so what they're trying to do is make themselves stand out. They're trying to make themselves get noticed. And maybe trying, and this is my interpretation, I think, I don't think he said this, but maybe trying to show that they're really confident in themselves, you know, to wear that type of glasses. And so all you basically have to do is get guys charged up, and they will adopt a behavior where they're competing with other men. So that was pretty interesting. And most of the guys all the guys I talked to this week, when I said that the guys went for the gaudy sunglasses, they all went, okay, we didn't see that one coming. But then once they heard the explanation, they were like, oh, okay, yeah. And it's interesting now, because now I'm like paying attention to myself, you know. Because in my work, and it's, I mean, obviously in my encounters as I go through the day and go through life, I encounter women and I am around women. So then the question of how much of the behavior that I'm displaying for them is really a peacock behavior where I'm trying to get notice. I would hope not much, but, you know. What do I know at the end of the day? Anyways, they also wanted to explore how women could affect a man's artistic genius. This one really wasn't much of a shocker. Basically, they took one group of guys, put them in an empty room, then herded them off one by one to a room that had some paper in it with, like, crayons for adults, and had them draw a picture. Just express whatever you're feeling now. The first group of guys were just like looking at them, what? And then the second group, before each of them went in, they had them spend time in the same room, except they had a tall, slender, darling brunette in there that they had told the little brunette gal to chat them up. So she's like very interested in what they're talking about. And, you know, she's got this cut-off short skirt, jean skirt on. Yeah. So, not surprisingly, when the second group of guys went in the room and they told them to draw what they were feeling, they were very artistic. They weren't necessarily artists, but they were willing to fill the page up with stuff. Yeah, well, okay. So, something else that came out of this that was interesting, they were talking about the responses, the physical responses that men and women have being in a sexually charged environment. And there's a researcher that not only asks questions, but wires her subjects up with all manner of probes. I'll let you figure out what kind of probes. And then what she does is she sits them in front of like a 10 minutes of a Russian documentary on, I don't know, power plants or something. You know, something that has no sexual content at all, to get kind of a baseline, and then she cuts to porn. Now, what's interesting is she actually has them move a fader as well, up and down, showing how much they think they're getting turned on. And what's fascinating is while men's movement of the fader corresponds fairly closely to what they're experiencing physiologically, women's movement on the fader is sometimes, oftentimes, whatever you want to say, in the opposite direction. So when the porn would come on and her body would begin to respond according to the physical sensors, a lot of times the women were responding exactly opposite and saying, no, I don't like this. This isn't turning me on. It's not. When in fact, her body is showing all the signs of increased blood flow, yada, yada, yada. So that was kind of an interesting tidbit. They also did an experiment where they had guys spit in a tube so they could get a testosterone level, and then they had them in a room talking to a young lady, and then they had them fill out a survey and spit in the tube again about how they felt about the young lady. And they said, for guys, even the men who were adamant about the fact that this young lady was not their type, even for those guys, their testosterone levels were going up. So as soon as the body, or as soon as whatever parts of the brain you want to say, detect that, oh, well, there may be an opportunity for mating here, the first thing the body does is start ramping up the testosterone levels. And they did, say that then starts changing a man's behavior. So, you know, he keeps his shoulders, men start keeping their shoulders more upright, they smile more, they make eye contact, you know, they are showing off. Again, that gets back to that peacock thing. Which, again, I start thinking about, okay, you know, what, how much of this is what I'm displaying as well when I'm talking to people and stuff. They have done some studies to find out exactly how this cascades through the brain. And they started talking about the different areas of the brain that light up and what sequence they light in and how much time it takes for us to get to the place where we say, oh, hey, hold it. And they talked about the fact, I just got my mail, by the way, that the first thing that goes off is the amygdala. It's way down in the center of the lower brain. That's like the first ping receptionist. And so it goes off first, like, hey, woman, for guys. And then the next thing that lights up is the ventral striatum. And it says, oh, hey, woman. And so it starts releasing hormones. And then the next thing that lights up is the medial frontal cortex. And the medial frontal cortex is either going to go, yeah, woman, or it's going to go, whoa, whoa, hold it. Remember the last time that you thought a woman looked so pretty and she took care of herself? She turned out to be high maintenance. You remember that? I'm backing into my garage. And so you've got this definite pattern that the brain is moving through. And the question that the researchers were trying to answer is, okay, so in this pattern, how much time does it take? What gets involved? What slows it down? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they saw the pattern, and then they went out and they actually tried a little experiment. And so what they did was they got a woman, a very attractive woman, in a really short tube dress with the low-cut top with her little sunglasses on in high heels. And they went onto a street and they measured the cars going by, the average speed of the cars going by, and the average speed was about 24 miles an hour. And then what they did is they had her walk down the street and they measured the average speed of the cars that were driven by guys, and no surprise, 17 miles an hour, it dropped precipitously. But it would drop in a very specific way. You know, the guys would be driving up, they'd spot here, you know, car slows down. And then about 2.5 seconds later, the car speeds back up. It's like, okay, time done. So what they were concluding from that was that, you know, there's a couple of seconds between the time the base part of the brain fires off to the time that the frontal cortex gets involved. That was their conclusion. Me personally, I don't know that that's true. I think we can rein it in and get control of it a lot closer than that, quicker than that. And also, 2.5 seconds, you know, you're doing 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour. 2.5 seconds is about the amount of time that it takes to get your head turned all the way around to where you're craning your neck. And then your medial frontal cortex says, Dumbo, if you don't start watching the road again, you're going to have an accident. And so then, you know, the guys spin back around and put on the gas. So anyways, the one a couple of more that were interesting. And then one of them came to their conclusion, and I think the conclusion is right, but if you've listened to this podcast for any time at all, you're going to know I'm going to have a slightly different conclusion. Uh-oh, I'm getting a phone call. I will call him back in a second. Anyway, so one of the last things they did was they had women come in for a casting call, told them to dress as they would for a first date. Then half of them they had sit in an empty room. Half of them they had chatted up by some good-looking guys. All of them were then sent one at a time down a street where another woman was struggling with a set of boxes trying to get them into her car. The interesting thing was the gals who had sat in the room with nobody walked right past her and didn't help. But the women who had been in the room with the guys chatting her up, they all stopped to help. And the researchers explained this by saying that when women get in a sexually charged environment, I don't want to misquote them. The girls with lust, this was their quote, the girls with lust on their mind were more helpful. Unconsciously, they want the man to know that they are helpful individuals, that they care about others, they're less likely to leave, to cheat, and that they would be a better mother. So that's really interesting to me, that all you got to do is have some guys chatting with a woman, and even after she leaves the room, her behavior demonstrably shifts. Not that she isn't capable of that behavior at all times, but that she makes a choice. He probably just left me a voicemail. He did. Her behavior shifts as long as she's got that going on because she's trying to make a good impression. The last thing that was interesting was they brought in couples, and they had some of the couples talk about their most sexually passionate moment with their mate, and they had the other couples talk about their lives together and their love for each other. And then they had the men and the women both look at pictures. And of course, some of them were more provocative than others. And they timed how long the men lingered on the more provocative pictures. And inevitably, if they're talking about the sexually charged environment, they're going to linger longer on the more provocative pictures than if they're talking about love. And their conclusion, which I happen to agree with, is that if you are in a love relationship and you love your spouse, it is easier to get control of the lust impulses because you love your spouse. And I think that's absolutely true. I would also say that it's true that it's easier to get control of your lust impulses if you actively combat the idea in your mind that women exist as tools to help a man control his sperm count. If you actively remind yourself that women are human beings to be treated as human beings and not just objects, then when the flesh is constantly trying to get you to ramp up and, you know, lust after the female form, I think it becomes easier to think of the person that you're looking at as somebody's daughter, as somebody's mother, as somebody's sister, as somebody's wife, and to want the best from them and not simply what you can get out of them. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.